And we're live.
Hey, everybody. This is Brian Ozone, and we're here with another Masters of the Galaxy podcast. And I am here with a very special guest this week, Mr. Doug Howard. He is songster from the Power Tour. Doug, thank you for joining us.
Hi, everybody.
It's definitely a pleasure for me because I am a fan. I'm not sure that you've done a lot of these interviews, actually. I haven't seen many or seen any
Honest
of them.
To God, this is the first interview I've done regarding the tour. I don't know, maybe a week after the tour. That was it.
Yeah.
So it's been a long time. Nobody,
yeah.
A couple of times they've asked me to come out to Comic-Con. It just never worked out.
Really? Yeah, it's very, very happy that you said yes. And, you know, we had the he and she last week. We had Jack and Leslie Wadsworth on. And they were saying how involved you actually were in the show. I don't know, so maybe if you want to, like, if you can elaborate on that, like, with the music, did they allow you to, because you're a musician, if everybody doesn't know that out there, you really are a musician, and so,
really am.
Living the dream.
The character songster, I don't know, a lot of people saw that show, I mean, and so what they may not have been aware of is that I was live, where all the other voices, except for some of, I forget the character's name, which is Zach Hoffman, played the guy with the mustache. Anyway.
Man at Arms.
There you go, Man at Arms. He was he did some live stuff, but I was live because the issue was is to try to put that show on stage and get it all done in 2 hours. The best way to describe it was like kind of like Wagner's The Ring with all the characters, an Ozzy show, and a roller derby all sort of rolled into one. And so to tie it all together, they needed a narrator and for the whole show. Somebody had to be singing and explaining and everything that was going on, and not as opposed to just having somebody off to the side trying to say, okay, and this is who this is. They created Songster, and Songster was the, I guess you'd call it, Bard of the Galaxy. So I sang live, and everything else was canned. It was different from what I normally used to do.
It was very
different. It was physically pretty demanding, particularly when we were doing Radio City Music Hall. We did 18 sold out shows in 10 days.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
They jammed all these shows on us, and nobody wanted I had an understudy, but nobody wanted him to go on. We had to give him a couple of shows for New York because it was New York, but these were critical shows. Long story short, I ended up having to do 3 shows in a day sometimes.
Yeah.
And the first show was fine. Second show was, fine. Third show, my voice was starting to get a little beat. So physically it was very demanding. So anyway, back to the original story of, Songster. So Songster was a character that never existed and hasn't existed since. And he was probably for good reason. When I came in, they had certain preconceptions as to what they wanted. And I'm not really an actor. I mean, I've acted, but, I kind of came in with, well, yeah, this will work. This won't work. And during rehearsals, we sort of ironed it all out. And that's how Songster developed his personality and his look, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. And I was all over the place, in terms of the stage. It was a lot of territory to cover. We had to actually cut the show down in terms of size for Radio City Music Hall because it was that big. I mean, it used to take over about half the floor of an average basketball arena, 880 lighting units, and I forget how big the damn stage was. Plus, you had the castle, and then you had a roller derby rink. So, you know,
it was big.
Yeah, so there was a lot of territory to cover, and a lot of singing, and it was very, very different. It was very different, very unique.
Were you able to any of the music? Did you get to fingerprint any of that, or was that already like pre-written from Mattel?
No, that was all. No. That was all pre-written. If I had done it, it would have been very different, and it wouldn't have been family appropriate. I can tell you that. But maybe not. But no, everything was all written out, and my dialogue was all written out. But I got together with the writers. We sort of tinkered with that a little bit. In terms of the vocal style, you know, that's all me. I mean, but
yeah.
Lyrics and, you know, the songs themselves, no, that was that they gave me the tape and said, here, learn this. And there I sat in my hotel room screaming at the top of my lungs, trying to figure this stuff out.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. See, now, you just mentioned it a little while ago that he songs that hasn't been mentioned since, but actually he has. I don't know if you know this though, but they did bring that character back. Last 2 years, they made new mini comics for the new figures, and they had songs in it.
Oh, interesting! I didn't see that.
As like a storyteller.
I don't.
So they have brought the character back, and every so often there's always a poll out there. You know, what's the five characters that you'd like made from, you know, since the inception of He-Man? And, you know, your name, Songster, always comes up. I always vote for you. I want you. I think you deserve it.
I do. Yeah. Well, I do recall getting a phone call from Mattel asking me about the character. Because, you know, Songster is their character. It's not like I made Songster. But Songster was based upon a lot of me. And so there was kind of like this gray area as to, you know,
the likeliness would be you, right?
My likeness. Right. And so, you know, we talked about it and blah, 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 blah. And it just, we never came to an agreement as to, you know, what should be done. But I don't know. He was, he was an interesting character. It would be interesting to see how that character has sort of, I guess, evolved since we created him.
When were these conversations that you just said about the figure with Mattel?
It was a long time ago. It was a long time ago. It was like, I don't know. Occasionally I hear from some people that are like, you know, follow fans of the show and that's kind of how I get news of, you know, occasionally something going on. I think the guys that organized, I don't know, because some of your groups are very organized. Anyway, I got word, and then shortly thereafter, because there was this like poll going on, we really want Songster,
that
we saw in the live shows. And then, as I say, at that point, I can't remember who I spoke to, a couple people over at Mattel, and this went on for a little while, but never went anywhere.
Wow. That's unfortunate. Well, maybe it will now. You know, you never know. With, like I said, they reincarnated the figure, the character.
That's interesting. It'd be interesting to see what his costume looks like. Because people used to say, I look like a great big gay pirate.
with your guitar, right? What would that's what that was supposed to be.
Oh, right? My God. That was hilarious, that thing. Yeah.
The cane.
it was this like neon green and pink concoction of I don't know, and it had lights, you know, that blew off of it, and you know, and Ace Frehley would have, you know, desperately it, and you know, had little lasers and stuff, and of course, needless to say, like about, you know, maybe a month into the tour, none of the lights worked, but it was still, you know, a good prop, and something to do with my hands. It was part of the character. Running around with my plastic guitar.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I spoke about this last week with the Wadsworth about it. It's so funny that, you know, to this day, that tour still hasn't, it hasn't come out yet, like from a whole version of it from beginning to end in any type of good or bad version. There's nothing out there.
Oh, yes, there is.
Really? I guess we have to
Yeah,
have a talk.
there's some videos. Not bad. They're not bad.
Really?
Yeah, but I have no idea where they are. No idea. None. No idea. It's not completely lost to time. No, there were some shoots of the show.
There were, huh?
Not very, professional ones, I would say. I mean, it's not like it was a five camera shoot going on. Although with that show, you'd need probably about 30 cameras.
Yeah, there was a lot going on.
Oh my God.
I was,
Sword fights, roller derby, and Orko falling down. And
yeah.
that was actually, no, she never fell down. She was a really good skater. And how she did that in that costume, I have no idea. She's a better dancer than I was, and she was on roller skates. That
Yeah,
was Marcy.
that was a big costume she wore too. It was
Yeah,
huge.
Marcy. Yeah, Marcy. Yeah, she was skating around in a Hershey Kiss.
That's kind of what it looked like. You're right.
All right. So anyway, yeah, there are some tapes of that show, but I have no idea where they are. Couldn't tell.
Well, there was a tape last year at PowerCon they did show. Someone has it, but I'm, you know, just saying that it hasn't gotten out to the public yet in any shape, way, or form. That it's kind of strange.
I can't see anybody authorizing something like that. The quality of what I've seen,
That, yeah.
I don't see any brand manager approving that.
Yeah, they
So
never, so there never was like an actual pro shot of it then, I guess, right?
no. Well, they shot the commercials for the show. I remember one day, but the problem was, is there was a little bit of a union dispute going on. So there literally, I don't think more than maybe two characters in the commercials that were actually in the show.
Did you make the commercial?
I couldn't. I was union. I wasn't allowed to be on set.
Nice. Yeah.
I mean, that's just, showbiz crap, man.
Yeah, no. I'm union guy. I get it, you know. I understand. Can't break the line.
Yep, that was it. But no, it was interesting. Year and a half I was out on that tour.
How old were you when you got on
I don't know, eight.
that?
I don't know. I think I start. I was like, I don't know, in my late 30s, and then by the time I got off the tour, I was in my 60s.
Put that much time on you?
Yeah, right. But let's see. The way I got that was I had come off the road. I'm trying to remember what I was off the road from. Either Todd Rundgren a cappella or the Edgar Winter Group. There's a break there, and there was nothing going on. I get a phone call. Would you be interested in this thing? And this friend of mine gives me the pitch on what this is. Well, you're going to be this, narrating character, and you're going to be on a spacesuit, and you're going to be coming down from the ceiling on a 50-foot chain hoist, and it's going to be an arena tour, and it's based on He-Man, She-Ra, and the Masters of the Universe. Click. Phone rings. Yeah, no, this is serious. This is for real. I thought you were just like, I thought you were pulling my leg.
Right.
I said, well, I don't know if this is really right for me. And you know, I said, so I don't know. I don't think that's going to really work. And they said, well, if you were to consider doing it, you know, would you consider this amount of money? Click.
Double click.
Again. Hi. Yeah. Okay. You want to try that again? And, you know, well, would you consider this amount of money? Click. This went on for like a couple of weeks. And finally, they offered me a package that I really couldn't say no to. And then once I really started like understanding what was going on, because all I knew was that it was this cartoon thing. I thought it was like, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja or something or other. And, you know, I mean, I don't really, you know, I stopped at like Bugs Bunny.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, so I started looking at the script, and that's really actually what grabbed me. You know, the paycheck didn't hurt, but it was about empowerment for these kids. You know, you have the power. And I suddenly got like the way that Gary Goddard and the writing team wove this whole message to these kids through the storyline and through the script. It was strong. This was a really strong message. You know, you have the power. And then when I got to sing this.
Yeah. You know, yeah.
And you have the power to be anything you want to be. You can change the world from bad to good if you only knew it could be you. And I remember that still. and there I am standing in front of 6,000 people with these kids, and you can hear a pin drop with all these kids. It's that quiet. And I'm delivering this message. And at that point, it really hit me how truly, truly special this tour was. And, you know, how weird it was that, you know, this basically, you know, glorified sideman, you know, gets cast into this thing. You know, I considered it actually really, you know, I started really delivering. Let's put it that way. Very early on, I remember it was in tech rehearsals. We had rented out the entire arena in Baton Rouge for rehearsals. This is the kind of money that they were spending. And we're living in this, in the arena, you know, and like, this is where we are all day long. And I got to really deliver this stuff. And I started really seeing, you know, what was really going on here. And so that was, to me, that was the real special thing. That was the real magic that made that tour so different than a lot of these, you know, Disney on Ice. Well, Disney on Ice is cute, and they do some really, really feel good stuff. But like, I don't know, Muppets on Parade, and, you know, like whatever character they dress up and they send them to, you know, the felt, whether, you know, the theaters, and they go on the road. This was really powerful. And plus the size of the show was huge. You know, had everything going. We had more injuries, you know, due to people falling off of, you know, platforms and getting
the roller derby too, right?
The roller derby. Actually, the skaters were like, you know, we had a few injuries, but not those guys. You know, they could get out of the way. you know, you had explosions, and we had it was nuts. But that, back to the point. The whole message that the show was giving outside of, you know, He-Man battling Skeletor and, you know, good guys going after the bad guys and, you know, and the message of empowerment to these kids, that was to me very special. So, you know, I can sit here and be, you know, kind of cheeky about a lot of it, but that is to me what sets that tour apart from a whole lot of these other things that have come since then, because nothing like that had ever been done before on that scale.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's very nice that you believe in that way. Cause honestly, as a kid sitting there in the audience, you know, that's the way I kind of felt. I'm not going to lie. You know, when people like
you saying
that, you know, yeah, man, it's crazy.
I could see it. We had a kid one show Because all you kids had power swords.
Yes.
You know, and they charge you like an arm and a leg for the power swords out front, and your parents, you know, shelling out the bucks. But the kids all, you know, raise their power swords, and, you know, they take the whatever oath it is. Is that you?
Oh, yeah, it's all right.
Oh.
I got to do my taxes tomorrow.
Is anybody watching this thing? We get any call-ins? Anybody paying attention to what we're talking about here? So, you know, you kids all raise your power sword, and, you know, I forget the thing that you all had to pledge. Anyway, all these kids got power swords. And right. Then all of a sudden, Skeletor makes his first appearance, right? You know, big puff of smoke, and there's Skeletor standing in the mouth of Grayskull. This kid, about 7 years old, at the top of his lungs, he's down in the orchestra, at the top of his lungs goes, "It's Skeletor! Let's kill him!" And he's running down the aisle, and he jumps up on the stage.
Really?
Jumps up on one. He made it as far as one of the roller skating. And he's coming for Skeletor, man. But, you know, that gives you a great way to sum that up is, I was doing an interview, Jack and Leslie. Everybody, we were doing an interview on one of these, you know, panel talk shows. And this woman gets up and from the audience and asks a question. And she says, you know, talking about the violence of the show and how much, you know, violence there is and this, that, and the other thing. And I got really angry because I said, you know, you're off base on that. Because when you're 6, 7, 8 years old, even younger, everything's scary, man.
Oh, yeah.
Everything's bigger than you. Everything's louder than you. Everything's stronger than you. Okay, everything is scary. And this show is turning around telling you that you don't have to be afraid of everything, that inside of you, again, you have the power to be anything you want to be. And let's start with your power sword and their Skeletor, and let's go kill them.
Right, right.
Nice. I mean, so anyway, I've overstated my case, but I think that...
no, I think you definitely said what exactly was meant to be said.
And I think this is the only reason I can think of you guys still following this freaking thing all these years. You know, no, it was a special show. It was a special show.
No, it was for, like, it can go both ways. I mean, like, you know, it was for me being sitting there and for you guys as well, you know, talking with you guys, you know, you today, last week, and then last year, PowerCon, they had a bunch of people there. Next week, I have Gus Parks on, who played Ninja.
Yeah.
He's going to be on. You know, it's just a really cool thing to, you know, track you down, talk to you about it, bring back some memories if I could, you know, and let people know about it. Because this, you know, Power Tour was, to me, it's the Masters of the Universe is a big entity. It's huge. You know, so many people follow it, but they think some people don't know about the Power Tour. It's such a small little thing. And your character is...
I know about that, man. We outgross Genesis.
But you know, even like your character is like the only original character from that show. And that's why I always say, like, with those polls, your character... I would love for it to be made. So you're that much more set in stone with everything else. Cause I think you guys should be, you know, you guys should be to the forefront more than what you are.
I don't know. It's interesting. You know, Masters was a complete departure from what I normally do.
Which you think so?
Yeah, right. you know, I mean, you know, banging around in bands since I was, well, let's see. I started playing in clubs pretty much nonstop when I was 15, 16. I barely finished high school. I was in the clubs all the time. So at that point in my career, up and through maybe my 20s, you know, being at the forefront, being, the flavor of the week was really, really important. It was actually the be all and end all. And when I got my first major record deal and we banged our first top 10 single, and to have all of that happening, that was great. And to be a part of that. But after a while, you know, first thing that happens is that, you know, your flavor of the week only so long. Mm-hmm. Very, very, very few people get to be icons. You know, I mean, one in a quadrillion, you know, not everybody gets to be Keith Richards, you know? So my point of the story is that what I learned later on is that it's actually the work itself. It's the creation itself. It's the performance itself that is, you know, frankly, what it's all about. I've had like couple of, like, you know, when I sit there and I do an album, if I'm the producer, if I'm, you know, the writer on it, as soon as the album's done, I forget about it. I don't, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. me, it's just done. Let's move on to the next thing. Let's move on to the next creative thing. You know, give that to the marketers, give that to the label, give that to, you know, whoever's going to pump it and try to, you know, get it to pay for itself. Payback's all the money that I spent. But it's the process itself. And, to me, it's at the time that the tour was going on, it was, you know, it was a blast. It was a lot of fun. It was a hell of a lot more clean cut than any other tour I'd ever been on. In terms of, you know, general behavior, and subject matter. Yeah. You know, it was great at the time, but as soon as the tour was over, it was like, okay, what's the next project? You know, what's the next thing we're working on? And I was off to, you know, I don't know, I think I went with back with Edgar, or I might've gone, you know, I think I was out with Roy Buchanan after that. So, you know, the point I'm trying to make is that, it's really great to have you guys be that psyched up and, to know that the work that we did touched you so deeply. That's incredible. But by the same token, at least for me personally, don't feel as though we are slighted because not enough people know about it, or it's so-and-so didn't go on to be, some huge superstar or something. That's really not the point. And when you've been doing, you know, when you've been entertaining and banging for 45 years, you know, you get that kind of perspective. The fact that, you know, one person like yourself takes the time to track me down, that's fine. That's great. I'm more interested in, when's the next rehearsal? I want to do it, you know, there's no need to, you know, feel as though anything or anyone was in any kind of way. That's not the case at all. You know? If that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, it does. It's just a, you know, thing I have that I think that if there's a way that it could get out there more, maybe if the videotape of it was made, people would recognize it more. That's just all I'm saying is that it's not as popular.
Very, very different than the cartoon, the live action or the cartoon series. Very, very different in terms of the delivery and the depth of the message. Now, I see what you're saying on that. Yeah, I see your point.
No, because the message, what you were talking about before, it's really like a powerful thing, you know? You can really,
It's huge, particularly to kids, you know, at that age and nowadays. Nowadays, even more. They got to worry about going to school, you know? Really? Whoa! What the hell happened? But I see what you're saying. No, you know, it's the actual doing of the work itself. And, you know, to us, that's what we get off on. The fact that, you know, you can be so deeply affected by it well, that means we're doing our job.
Yeah.
You know? That means we're doing our job. You know.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. Like, I just would love to spread that with other people and let them enjoy it as well and see it. And that's why I asked if there was ever a pro shot of the show, because it just boggles my mind that all this time has passed and it still hasn't been on video or DVD now or whatever.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, we were talking about doing a live album, but of course that was ridiculous because I was the only live voice outside of Zach. You know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, wow. I mean, as I said, everything else was canned. So all you know, but we did talk about that because you know there was this feeling that with me singing it that there might be some interest. And I think at one point they talked to a couple of labels about doing an album, but the terms again didn't come together. Nobody could completely agree, and by the time it got, by the time it would have all done, the tour would have been over anyway. So, that was something that they would have wanted to do, to distribute at the shows. So,
yeah.
But there was talk of that. I think that I don't think anybody really thought about filming it. And I think. Now, this is just supposition on my part, but this show is really difficult to put together physically, and technically. At the time, they didn't have a lot of the tech that we have nowadays, where everything can just be run from a hard drive. Back in those days, the lighting cues were cued. They were digital, but they were cued on reel to reels.
Yeah, wow.
So yeah, there's reel to reels going, and that's what the signals were on. And the show had to be timed like that in order for all the explosions, in order for all this the soundtrack to match the action. So these guys, in terms of the startup on this show, I think filming it was definitely down the totem pole in terms of priority. they had to, we had a cast of thousands. It was huge. The load in on this thing took a day and a half, which is pretty amazing that they did that in a day and a half. Cause,
it was a big set.
It was a huge set.
Yeah, man.
Of course, nowadays people have blown that stuff out of the water. But at the time it was a big show. As I said, in terms of the coverage, I remember seeing a Polestar when somebody dragged me a Polestar in my dressing room and said, look at this, we outgrossed Genesis. I was like,
that's crazy.
Oh. Yeah. That really is insane. Yeah. We were number two that year in terms of touring revenue. And the only person that beat us was Billy Joel.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah, at least another fellow New Yorker,
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, go ahead.
I was going to say, how did you feel after a show? You must have been like completely drained from running around and singing your heart out, man. I mean,
that different from what I used to do anywhere else. I mean, in terms of the intensity, I mean, they told me that I would sweat out about a cup and a half of water a show. That's how much my wardrobe was soaked, but that was standard. Cause like any large tour, particularly back then, the kind of shows that we used to do, with a variety of bands, you were all over the place. You were beating it, man. You were working it. Yeah. The only way that you're going to be able to reach, like I remember doing Monsters of Rock in Donington, England with Touch, 60,000 kids. And, and we were a relatively new band at the time. And in order to, get their freaking attention all the way to hell in the back and engage them, you had to really project and work that hard. So physically, it wasn't that different than a lot of other tours that I had done. The only difference is they tried to teach me how to dance.
Did you do the white
part? That wasn't happening. That's funny. As a musician, you think, oh, you know, you got a sense of rhythm. You should be able to dance. Dude, can't dance in my life. I mean, it was pathetic.
I can sing, I can run around,
I can deliver lines, but, you know, ask me to sit there and do a scissor cut. I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Yeah, you can bang your head and tap your foot, but you're not going to swing your hips, man. It's different.
Yeah, you know, I can't. Don't ask me to do pirouettes. It's not going to happen. So yeah, that was pretty funny. The choreographer were in rehearsals, and she's sitting there, and she just went like this, freaking hopeless. That was the only slight difference.
Oh boy,
I was exhausted. Yeah, but no more so than any other tour, and you know the schedule was pretty much the same. You know, finally going to sleep at 7 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. You know, it's just that was life, you know, back then.
Yeah.
You know.
Now you guys toured did you guys tour in a bus or did you?
Yeah,
a bus, right? Yeah.
That was oddly, you know, normally when we're touring, you know, we've got decent coaches and, you know, you got nice bunks and, this bus was a little different. The show was produced by, or it was originally produced. One of the original producers was Kenneth Feld, who did the circus, Ringling Brothers, Barnum and Bailey.
Yeah, yes. I remember his name that on the posters.
Yeah. I think they got some of their logistics from the circus because the buses that we were on, I think they had lions in them before we got them. they weren't so hot. travel sometimes of that tour was kind of rough. It was kind of rough. But you know, you know, you're hired to do a gig. You're out there. That's your job. You shut up. You do it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, it must. Yeah. Did you guys, other than the Radio City, were there other places that you stayed for more than 1 or 2 days? Like, because that must have been a huge break for you, you know, those shows. Because you were here for like a week or so, right?
Yeah, we were in New York for 10 days. Every time the show pulled in, we were usually in town for about 3 or 4 or 5 days. And we would sell out every time.
Yeah,
And we'd have, I mean, the only places I think we did a little weird was in the deep, deep South. But outside of that, and I couldn't figure that one out. Although, no, actually, I could kind of figure it out because we used to have people picketing out in front.
It's the deep South.
We had people, these people used to show up all the time and they'd be picketing and protesting because we were Satanists.
Yeah, like Kiss.
Yeah. I mean, it was like, oh yeah, I remember you guys from the last tour I was on. Same guy. Yeah, I still
got following you.
Look at the Bible you gave me. Thanks.
they were your fans from your last tour.
Yeah, right. Still doing Satan's work. Okay. Rupp Arena, I remember. That's a serious arena. It's not called Rupp anymore, but that holds, I think, 6,000 change and sold out every night. So we would be in a town for a week at a time. And New York, you know, wasn't really that different. We were only booked within that slot. I forget who was coming in behind us. You know, might have been, I don't know, Liberace or something. So we couldn't, you know, extend the run. So they just added shows to the days.
Oh, okay.
So then we have like, you know, 2 show days. And we kind of knew that was going to happen. But then when they pushed 3 show days on us.
That must have been tough.
Wasn't tough after I had a conversation with them. It was really easy. It was, oh, okay, this is what you're going to give? Oh, no problem. Yeah, I'll do it for that. Yep, no problem.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's got their price.
Oh yeah.
But so that's how that worked out. And touring, let's see.
You have any funny funny mishaps or crazy stories that you want to that happened to you on stage, like any
Oh,
miscues?
yeah, sure. I mean, it was always something. I mean,
Something must have happened that you can share.
yeah, we had water gun fights on stage one night. That was pretty good. And the audience had no idea what was going on. Everybody had water guns hidden in their costumes, and we were nailing each other with water guns. The dancers used to always try to screw with me, get me to screw up my lines because I was live. And, you know, they'd come up when, you know, I forget, one of the dancers runs up when they're leaving the stage and shakes my hand and leaves me with some rubber dog crap in my hand. And I'm sitting there looking, I'm looking at this rubber dog crap in my hands, talking about, you know, you have the power. Silly stuff like that. It was all pretty harmless, though. I mean, nothing like, you know, being out with Touch or being out with Edgar, or, you know, the bands I've been out with. It was everybody kind of had a sensibility that, you know, come on, man, this is, you know, it's a family show, this is a kid show, you know, you got to kind of keep it cool. But the weirdest thing that happened to me, I was Radio City, actually. And everybody's grown up now, so I can tell these kind of stories. Not like I'm talking to kids anymore. So I'm doing a second show or third show at Radio City, the third day. And Radio City Music Hall has a traditional stage with orchestra pit down below, and they put plywood over the orchestra pits because, you know, they used every square inch that they could.
Yeah, needed it.
For people to run around. So, you know, anytime I saw that in any show I'd ever been in, well, the first thing I'm doing is I'm jumping on top of the orchestra pit because I want to get in the audience's face. So I did it the first show, and I'm down the, you know, welcome to my universe, Captain Masters of the Universe, the first number of the show, and get down the audience's face, and, you know, shaking hands, and, you know, getting people riled up. And then the third night I did it, and somebody had placed a tumbling mat in the wrong spot, and I was wearing these big high-heeled the pirate boots, you know, I mean, as I say, the big, huge, big, great big gay pirate with these purple boots. Not that there's anything wrong with that. My heel hit this mat and my ankle went out.
Ooh.
I heard it go pop, pop. And there I am, inches away from the front row at Radio City, singing my guts out. And this pain is screaming up my leg. Froze where I was, kept singing, kept a smile. And as soon as I finished, but I didn't move. And I could see, you know, stage manager who used to have his little desk out there, I could see he was looking up. So he knew something was wrong. And they took the spotlight off me, and I jumped back up on the stage, and I found one spot. And I just stood there for the entire first act. With a torn ligament.
Oh, wow. Really? That bad?
Can't stop.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, no.
Can't stop.
Can't break character.
So I'm hearing chatter on the intercom off stage left. I can, because they have these little intercom things that the crew talks to themselves. I'm hearing chatter. And I think, why isn't he moving? Why isn't he moving? And then I heard them say, he's hurt. He's hurt. Everybody over to stage left, catch him when he comes off. So as soon as the spot was off me, and they went to something else, and I'd finished the first act. I managed to get over there, and I collapsed in these guys' arms. They brought me upstairs to the dressing room, and in comes the nurse, this guy. This guy, you know, he's the house doctor. He's the house nurse. And, you know, they got my boot off, and they, you know, we took a look, and man, the thing was a mess. I mean, it was all purple, and it was, you know, it was all big. And he said, well, you know, I don't know what to do here, but, you know, you really need to go get that x-ray. And, you know, I said, well, they're in the middle of a show, so that's not going to happen. I can't turn around and have the understudy go on because I have to be on in 10 minutes for the rest of the show. I said, right. What you're going to do is you're going to tape me up and you're going to give me an injection, and I'm going to get through the rest of the show, and then we'll worry about it afterwards. So And he said, "Oh, I don't know what you're talking about." I said, "Yes, you do. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Come on, man." And, you know, okay. So they finally, you know, I think they put Novocaine or something in my, you know, ankle. And I had, you know, but there was so much pain. There was no way that I wasn't going to know where I am. Anyway, finish the act. That's the first half of that story.
Gets better?
It gets really weird.
Okay.
It gets really weird. The next day, I hobble into the show because I'm figuring, all right, I'm not going to go to an X-ray. I know I've screwed myself up, but I can tape up my foot. And, you know, I know what to do here. I've, you know, had injuries before. The place is in an uproar. I'm like there about an hour and a half before the show. The place is in an uproar. People are running around. And there's FBI agents running all over the theater.
What?
And an FBI agent comes up to me. He says, "Mr. Howard?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, can we speak to you?" Well, yeah, I guess, you know. Guess I'm not saying no. Let's go up to my dressing room.
Do you want my autograph?
Yeah. So, you know, you're looking for free tickets or T-shirts or something? Because that's how we used to get out of traffic problems, you know. I mean, he goes, now these two agents, you know, and I'm in my dressing room. They're saying, you had an injury yesterday. How are you now? He said, "Oh, you know, I'm okay." Sure. And they said, the house nurse came in and treated you. And I said, "Yeah." And they started asking me questions about the house nurse. Do you know him? You know, have you ever dealt with him before? Have you ever this, that, and the other thing?
This is weird, man.
I've never met the guy. You know, I said, I was injured. I came in my dressing room. He walks in, he takes care of my leg, you know, and I was supposed to go to the hospital and I didn't. And here I am. And I don't know, I don't know the guy. And they said, "All right, right." And they kept, you know, asking me the same questions 3 ways from Sunday. It turns out that guy, the nurse, was back then, I don't remember if you remember the headlines, the abortion clinic bomber.
What, are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding you.
Wow.
He disappeared because he knew something was up.
Yeah. He went on the run.
But that was where he was hiding out at the time.
Holy shit.
Yeah, right? So that's just one weird story of what happened. Yeah, man. And we're all sitting there going, I don't know.
Wow. Maybe that's why you didn't know what you were talking about, the injection.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
You had no idea.
Yeah, right? I have no idea what you're talking about, son. Yeah, right, sure.
Wow, that is freaky, man.
Isn't that weird? Isn't that
weird?
Yeah. So, the whole place was in an uproar over that. And, but then it, you know, that within a matter of a half an hour, it was business as usual. You know, everybody put it to the side, but I thought that was pretty damn bizarre. But as the rest of the show, in terms of funny stories, it was mostly just pretty much, you know, very tame because of the nature of the audience.
Yeah.
And, you know, also in terms of any kind of press, you know, I used to say in a lot of the bands that I was in, you know, I get paid really, really well to act like an asshole. And that's our job. That's our job description, you know, is to act like complete idiots, you know.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and because that's how you, you know, generate attention. Well, we didn't want that kind of attention for this game. So, you know, you had to be very, very careful and aware of the press because, you know, wherever we were, you know, we were obviously under scrutiny and you know, you had to watch your behavior, watch your language and, you know, just basically, you know, keep it clean. And that's fine, you know, but the rest of it is, say, putting dog crap in my hands. Let's see, the water gun fight. I don't know what shows you were at, but occasionally I would get bored. And do you remember the first huge battle during the first act when all the characters got swords and they're all fighting the lizards and everything?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I'm off stage during that, okay? I basically finished that's when I finished the first act. And I got nothing to do for, you know, about a half an hour or so until we start the circus. That's when I come back on. Well, so one day I got into my head, there was this character that had like a snowman head. I don't remember what character it was, but there was this snowman head on the prop table and a sword. So I'm still in the songster costume, but I put the snowman head on and I ran out of Castle Grayskull with a sword. And I'm going like this and all the chaos. And Leslie caught that, and she was laughing so hard she almost fell down and completely lost it. She just was laughing so hard. Nobody else ever caught it. Nobody else ever caught it, because I would have gotten in trouble for that. I would have gotten in big trouble for that. But there I am, yeah, in the songster costume with a snowman head on, running around with all the lizard people and, you know, and all that. That was funny. And I guess the only other thing was you remember the chain hoist that used to bring me down the beginning of the show?
Yes.
Yeah. It malfunctioned one night, and I almost went from the ceiling of the arena to the concrete below.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. Oof. And I managed to come down without my feet resting on anything. I was holding myself by the bars because the platform had given.
It free fell? Literally,
no, it was just hanging. It was just hanging, and it couldn't support me. And I'm still coming down, and I'm still singing. And we hit it. Nobody knew something weird happened. But I almost died. I almost
died.
Wow. That would have definitely taken me out. So I don't know. That's about all the funny stories I can remember.
Wow, that's pretty cool stuff, though. That abortion, that's insane.
Isn't that weird? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and the FBI agents didn't tell me this. I found out because they wouldn't tell me anything. You know, they're not going to tell you something.
Right. They just had to ask questions.
They asked questions and once they left. But I found out later from somebody else, oh, my God, do you have any idea what was happening?
Wow.
And I say, well, you know, okay. I got to be on in a half an hour.
If he's not going to tape on my leg, who else is?
Yeah, really. Okay, moving on.
Well, Doug, I don't want to take up too much of your time, man. And I want to say I really appreciate you being on and sharing some stories from there, because it was a special time. It was fun.
Yeah, I'll probably get in trouble and get a bunch of hate mail from some people after that. This is why we don't let you do interviews.
But again, I want to thank you. It was fun.
All right, man.
You know, maybe you'll have you on again in downtime.
Yeah.
Sometime in the future. If you're in. That'd be great. Thanks, Doug.
Reach out. Okay. Thanks a lot. Bye bye, everybody.
All right, man. Take it easy. See you guys later. I'll see you next week. Doug, thanks again, man.
All right, man.
Bye bye.